Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a city council meeting for April 4th, 2017. The time right now is 7:03 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutaback, Hanford, Rasmussen, Camp, and Gamble.
Thank you. And will everybody please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And before we continue, did we have word from Councilmember Davis that he would... Okay. So we'll note for the record when Councilmember Davis enters chambers. All right. The first item we have on our agenda this evening is public hearings. We have one public hearing this evening. It's AB 17-061, East Monroe Interim Zoning Extension, Ordinance Number 007-2017 for first reading. And Mr. Well.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Very briefly, Council, you'll recall that following the Central Puget Sound Growth Management Hearing Board's final ruling in March of 2016 that invalidated the two East Monroe reclassification and rezoning ordinances that you had adopted at the end of 2015, that the Council was faced with some public uncertainty concerning the present status of the East Monroe property as to how it was classified under the city's zoning code. Out of an abundance of caution to resolve any of that public uncertainty, the council adopted an interim zoning ordinance that reaffirmed that the property would continue to be classified in its original limited open space designation during the pendency of the compliance process and the subsequent judicial appeal that was filed by Heritage Baptist Church. In May of 2016, the council adopted a six-month interim ordinance to that effect. The council subsequently extended that ordinance in October of 2016, again for a six-month increment. The six-month extension term currently active is coming near expiration, and state law allows the council to renew the interim regulations provided that you hold a public hearing and adopt new findings and conclusions in support of the renewal before you actually act on the renewal. So before you tonight is a public hearing that would allow you to take that action and renew the current interim zoning regulations for the East Monroe property for an additional 6 months. As a reminder, the East Monroe lawsuit is currently pending before Division 1 of the Washington Court of Appeals. The briefing schedule has concluded and the parties are waiting for an oral argument date. There's no way to definitively estimate when the court will ultimately rule in that case, but my assumption is that it will likely occur before the six-month expiration of this most recent renewal that is before you. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the council may have. Apart from that, you'd conduct your public hearing tonight and then have first reading of the ordinance in the packet, if that's the council's preference.
Great. Yeah,
I'm sorry, very briefly, Mr. Mayor. The ordinance does contain a provision reiterating that the council is not limiting its compliance options by simply passing the interim ordinance extension that's been discussed with council previously.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for our attorney or for staff? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and open the citizen testimony portion of our public hearing. We do not have anybody who has signed up to speak during the public hearing. Is there anybody that would like to speak on this proposed ordinance? Okay, seeing none, Councilmember Gamble.
I move to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing.
Sorry. Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Camp to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing. Before I move to discussion on the motion, please let the record show that Councilmember Davis entered chambers 2 minutes ago at 7:06 p.m. All right, is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Okay, is there any discussion? Councilmember Gamble?
I move to close the public hearing.
Second.
We have a motion to close the public hearing from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Any discussion on the motion to close the public hearing? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Councilmember Gamble.
Move to accept as first reading ordinance number 007-2017, extending for an additional six-month period interim zoning originally adopted under ordinance number 003-2016 and subsequently extended under ordinance number 016-2016, formally expressing the City Council's acknowledgement and intent regarding the continued designation of the East Monroe area as limited open space following the Growth Management Hearings Board's decision and CPSG MHB case number 14-3006C. Adopting findings, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date.
Second.
Yeah, first from Councilmember Gamble. I have a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Councilmember Gamble, I understood the case number to be 14-3-0006C. I figured that Councilmember Scarborough would point out that you missed a zero as he did in the earlier hearing. All right, any so the motion is as typed in requested action C on Agenda Bill 17-061. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet. Mr. Ketchel, please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. Thanks for having me here today. My name is Jeff Ketchel. I am the interim administrator as of April 1st of the Snohomish Health District. Before, I was the environmental health director, so I'm here in a new role. I'm here tonight to speak of the per capita that you'll be considering tonight. I know in earlier presentations I've met with the council here, we've talked about the $2 per capita, and I see now that you're considering a $1 per capita. What I wanted to come to tonight is come and talk about the things that are happening in Monroe in collaboration with the Snohomish Health District and the things we're looking forward to. First of all, in the world of environmental health, we're still very active at Sky Valley Education Center. That's been in the news lately. We're continuing to work with the school on testing, and coming up, we're going to have a new round of testing here on April 10th, and working very closely with the EPA on that. We just had a conference call today between us, the EPA, and the school district, and some concerned teachers that felt the testing was not up to the standards. Also, in the world of environmental health, we issued a health officer order to put the cleanup down by the river. And I was happy to say that health officer order was met 100%. It was cleaned up. In fact, we think it was cleaner afterwards than it was before the transients moved in. In the world of communicable disease, we're seeing a very robust year in the world of tuberculosis. We've already had 11 new cases this year, and we only receive about 30 annually. We're currently managing 23 active cases of TB, and we have to actively make sure 18 of them take their medication every day. And most of them is our staff driving around to their houses and watching them take the medication. That's how important it is to make sure that people with active TB who are contagious are taking their medication, which often takes 6 or 9 months or more in order to complete their get over the TB. We've also been extremely busy with the mumps. Frank Wagner Elementary has been included in that list of schools with mumps cases throughout Snohomish County. We are currently at 18 confirmed, 29 probable, and 97 suspect cases. And when a communicable disease is reported to the Snohomish Health District, like mumps, it is our job to then investigate was there any case contacts? Did that person have the opportunity to infect somebody else? And in this case, we've been responsible for about 720 case contacts. So I say there's been 144 types of cases, but it's really the investigations to assure those people are being isolated, they're not communicating that disease to other people, what's their vaccine status, etc. That's where the real work begins. And then in the world of healthy communities, another great thing. You may be familiar with this. We were able to provide 60 of these signs for your parks to help enforce your city administrative rule regarding no smoking and no vaping in Monroe City parks. We're also working in the fairgrounds, and if you haven't already heard, the fairgrounds during the fair this fall will be smoke and vape free completely. With some smoke and vape free areas out in the parking lots, but the fairgrounds themselves will be smoke and vape free, and we're continuing to work with them, with Joel Nigel and the Monroe Community Coalition, to make that annual, just 10 more seconds. And then we're also Our medical reserve corps, we oversee a medical reserve corps of all medical volunteers that volunteer their time to support things in Snohomish County. And this past winter, our volunteers donated, volunteered 500 hours in the cold weather shelter here in Monroe. So those are just a sampling of what I went around and talked to my staff today saying, what's going on in Monroe? So I highly encourage you to support the health district in the various types of activities that we have going on now and we have going on in the future. A dollar is great. $1.50 would be better. $2 would be out of this world. It's in your hands. Thank you so much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Scarborough.
Mr. Ketchel. You mentioned the vaccine status of people who are coming up for the mumps. Can you give us statistics of how many are and are not? Or maybe just how many are not, or what percentage are not?
I don't have that handy. I could get that information for you. But if I could just talk one second about vaccines, that's been making the news a lot lately. Is the mumps, is the MMR working or not? And it's not working perfectly, but it's working to prevent more diseases. So what science tells us, if you're supposed to get two shots of MMR to be protected. If you get, if you've had no shots, you're about 1 in 2 chance of getting the mumps if you're exposed to somebody. But if you have your shots, you have about a 3.5% chance of getting the mumps. So it's not 10% chance of getting mumps. So it works in about 90% of the people. So while it's not going to absolutely make everyone immune, it will protect the majority of people, and it's our best defense against preventing it. So it's a virus, and so you can't take antibiotics to get over it. You got to go home, be isolated while you're contagious, and not go out. And that's what's making this very rough on families, is we currently have children that go to Frank Wegener Elementary who are vaccinated, who have to stay home and can't go to school until this passes. So,
thank you. Thank you. All right, is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? Anybody at all? All right, thank you. Next item on the agenda is consent agenda. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Rasmussen with a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. All right, the next item on the agenda is unfinished business. We only have one item there. This is AB 17-063, Snohomish Health District, proposed interlocal agreement regarding per capita funding request. Mr. Mosley.
Yes, there are members of the council. This is an issue that we discussed on several occasions at our last council meeting. Well, the last council meeting we discussed this, the council directed staff to bring back an ILU on per capita funding that would provide $1 per capita as part of an agreement with an ILA with the Snohomish Health District, and that's the agenda. That's the ordinance that's before you.
Council, do you have any questions or a motion? Councilmember Rasmussen.
I think we've discussed this, and you know, it's helpful having Mr. Ketchel here, and so I don't have any questions, but I'll go ahead and make a motion to move to authorize Mayor to sign the interlocal agreement with Snohomish Health District, allocating funding for of $1 per capita, expressly authorized further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Cutterback for the requested action as identified in Agenda Bill Number 17-063. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Gamble.
So I'm going to stay consistent on this. I still, you know, I'm not going to be voting in favor of this. I'm not. If you look around the county, there are a lot of cities that are not participating in this funding. We're talking about $18,000, the revenue generation for the health. I'm not saying that the health district's not important by the stretch of the imagination. I just don't believe that this is the proper way to go about funding for the health district. It's a one-time shot in the arm. Especially looking at their budget, and I want to say it was a $12 million budget, if I'm not mistaken.
Something like that.
we're basically doing this to feel good. I just want to make sure that we all understand that we're not getting any additional services for customers. It's all great stuff that they're providing. It's fantastic. They would be providing us the same services tomorrow if we get approved at zero in state status quo. And we'll be providing Mill Creek the same services, which probably has more demand on the system. For some of these larger cities have more demand on the system and on their resources than we do. So just remember that.
Any other comments? Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Doesn't matter. Sorry.
Councilmember Camp?
It's okay.
I missed the light.
It's okay.
Okay.
We're halfway there.
Okay, we're halfway there. Okay, so will those people who voted all opposed say no? Renee?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we've got two. Thank you. You threw me off there. I threw myself off. Okay, so we've got a 5-2 vote with Councilmember Camp and Councilmember Gamble voting against. All right.
If I could just take a moment.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. The only thing I wanted to add is I agree. A one-time shot in the arm is, I don't think it's an appropriate funding mechanism for this. I'd like to see something more long-term spread out through all the cities that are taking advantage of it. It doesn't mean that I'm in favor of people getting the mumps or taking away vaccines or anything. I just have issues with how this funding mechanism is put together. And I share those with Councilmember Gamble. Anyway, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next category on the agenda. We're now on new business, item number one. This is AD 17-064, ordinance number 008-2017, amending the Monroe Municipal Code regarding notification, publishing, and appeal timelines for first reading. And the presenter is Mr. Swanson.
Point of privilege.
Yes, sir. Councilmember Camp. Turn on the fan,
please.
Yes. Could somebody turn on the fan?
Anybody go out?
Jim, look. Is that what I'm seeing?
Woo!
Really? You didn't clap on her?
She's going to... She's got a remote control.
I do not control what happens.
She's got a remote.
Oh. All right, there we go.
Because the building takes off. All right, Mr. Swanson, you've got the con.
Well, apparently Liz has a con, but...
Yes.
You can go ahead. Thank you, Council Mayor. You'll notice a substitute bill on your desk that's going to be a little different from the one on your that was sent to you in email. The difference between this and what was on your email is staff unintentionally omitted a citation in the title portion of the ordinance. And so that would be the only difference you'll see actually between the two versions. And so this proposed ordinance is in line with the mayor's direction to streamline the permit process by standardizing the timelines with the revised code of Washington. And so RCWs essentially provide guidance on timelines with appeals, notices, and Monroe's was not in line with that and not in line with similar jurisdictions. And so how this will help overall is when developers go from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, everybody has their own rules. So one of the goals is where we can standardize, we will. I mean, this doesn't mean that we're standardizing our entire code with other jurisdictions, but just these subtle little nuances as people go through the permit process. And so look like minor changes, but they add up to a lot of time during the permit process.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Hanford?
Thank you. Thank you, Ben, for all your work on this, and Mayor for trying to get things streamlined. That's very much appreciated. I move to accept as first reading ordinance number 008-2017 sub, amending section 17.12.030, 17.30070, 20.12080, 21.40020, 21.60.010, and 21.60.020 of the Monroe Municipal Code relating to permit processing notification, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second. Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, and who was the second? A first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the substitute ordinance motion, which was placed on your dais as presented. Councilmember Cutterback.
Just a couple of questions. Ben, what's a working day? Is that a business day?
Correct.
Oh, okay. And then in the cover sheet on the first page, midsection, it says after the public hearing, city staff determined that allowing additional modes of delivery in addition to the U.S. mail would cause confusion and appeal timelines. This includes instances involving multiple parties of record, so forth and so on. But then in the ordinance, it does allow?
Correct, and thank you for bringing that up. So there were actually two sections. There was a section that we pulled out later on, so we start with the section that is in the code. So okay. You'll see on subsection D, where they added email or hand deliver in yeah. with standard U.S. mail.
Yeah.
So that was left in discussions with the city attorney. They had proposed some additional code that you'll see in other sections that references mail but does not include hand delivered or email. Okay. And those are basically around the appeal periods. So in discussions with the city attorney, when you have essentially at a public hearing, you'll have people that come in and testify and they give their home address, and so that's their contact. The applicant typically gives an email address for contact. And so when you set that appeal timeline, it started getting confusing on when that appeal timeline started. If I email somebody, it has instant delivery. If I second the U.S. mail, you're waiting a couple days.
Right.
So what is that appeal timeline? And talking with the city attorney, we felt this was a little too loose and opened this up a little bit for, you know, potentially unfair. Email it to somebody, it gets to them the next day, that gives them a few more days to review and go through
right.
the appeal process. So we essentially pulled that language out of what was approved by Planning Commission. And so there was that change. And I'm sorry I didn't bring that up. Thank you for catching that. That was
okay.
one of the
But it's in here.
It is in here.
Should it not be in here? I guess that's what I'm confused about.
In the staff report or in the... No, it's correct in the version we have in the ordinance.
Okay.
There was just more than one reference in the original code that was approved by Planning Commission.
Okay.
So that was a point that I wanted to make and I didn't make in my presentation.
Okay.
So thank you for bringing that up.
Okay.
I just wanted to clarify the discrepancy between when it went to Planning Commission and hit City Council.
Okay.
And I'd already discussed that with Planning Commission at a past meeting. So.
Just very briefly, Council, I agree with Mr. Swanson's comments. We've had several discussions about that. And this is one of those areas where the law really hasn't kept pace with technology,
mm-hmm.
and some cities have used email as an alternative to other types of more traditional notice at the local level, but for the reasons explained by Mr. Swanson, having kind of a variable approach at this stage without express state law blessing of that, I think, potentially sets us up to be the proverbial test case, and I typically don't recommend that. My advice generally, unless there's a compelling reason to the contrary, is to kind of swim safely in midstream, and that's what this ordinance does.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I understand. So it just took it out of another section and only has it in this section.
Exactly.
That's what that referred to, that confusion. So you've limited.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
Exactly.
I just want to make sure if I saw that discrepancy. I think that was it. Yeah.
Thank you. Yep. Councilmember Gamble.
Just to Councilmember Cutterback's point, I'm sure in the code somewhere at the beginning of those chapters that you've got definitions of what defines a calendar day or what defines as a working day, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Any other discussion on the motion? All right, seeing none, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Council, thank you. All right, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is new business item number 2, AB 17065, authorize additional 0.5 full-time employee for community development planning permit technician. And the presentation is being given by Ben.
Ben,
Mr. Worth,
my brother Ben. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tonight we were here to talk to you about staffing levels in the community development department.
department. We've historically had a half-time FTE for better part of 2 or 3 years. What we've noticed since even when our prior community development director was coming off and Ben's coming in, that we really have the need for more. We are asking for a full-time person. That position would be a limited term appointment. It'd be funded with revenues that are coming in that are being generated this year. And then we look at it at the end of this year for as part of the 2018 budget. So if you look at what we have budgeted for 2017 is about $25,000. The cost, assuming a May 1st start date, which is doable, but maybe a little bit of me being ambitious, is at $61,000. So the additional impact to the budget would be $36,982.35. We do have people that are currently working overtime, which includes after hours and weekends, and we do have an upcoming leave of absence and no one to cover that. So there's kind of the multi-pronged things are going good because development's coming in, that's great, but we want to make sure that we keep our customer service levels at a proper level, get permits out the door, and we know that we need an extra person in order to do that. And plus, oh, by the way, this one of our folks is going to be out for an extended period of time. So any questions at all? Ben's running the department. I'm just helping him out.
Yeah. If I could just add on to that. So right now, what the permit staff is doing is my direction to them is just keep the permits moving, whatever it takes. And so they're taking those files and they're just stacking them. Nothing's getting filed. Public information requests. We're not jeopardizing anything. We're not opening ourselves up to a lawsuit, but our timeliness isn't quite there because it just everything keeps getting pushed and pushed and pushed. And like Ben said, we have people coming in on weekends. Both of them, both our building and our planning tech, are both coming in on weekends. They're staying after hours. They're both very solid employees. I have no issues with them, and I also like to retain them for a long period of time, also, and not run them out. And as Ben stated, this would be with the one-time building funds that we're receiving, and would fund this position and then it would be reevaluated at a later date. This position would be cross-trained in both planning and building and then also be able to help out with those public information requests. Because even those public information requests are coming in from builders that are doing like level one environmental analysis. And so the longer our turnaround time, we're indirectly impacting their submittal process. And so those are the main reasons around this is our customer service and just keep things moving. That's my one goal right now.
Thank you. I don't know who was first, Councilmember Hanford or Cutaback. Councilmember Hanford.
Oh, thanks. So just to be clear, you're looking to hire a full-time planning tech position for the remainder of the year.
Correct.
And then the plan for next year is to try and keep that in the budget, that FTE?
Well, it depends on levels of, you know, how many permits are coming in the door and do we have revenues to support that ongoing. Mm-hmm. So that's why we know we need the person now. We know we need them from now to the end of the year. So we re-look at that. We would look at that again as part of the 2018 budget.
Which is like,
it's coming.
We're looking at that next month, right?
Yeah.
Very soon.
Yeah. I'll be giving direction to staff in June. And as you know, as the year goes on, we'll continue to get more applications and whatnot. And the nice thing about the subdivisions and whatnot, you know that these are multi-year projects. So mm-hmm. pre-app or preliminary plat is going through the process right now. Right now, we know that we're going to still have a volume of permits coming through the pipeline next year. Unless there's suddenly a downturn in the economy. So that is something that we would evaluate over the course of the summer just to see if the momentum still appears to be there in the forecast.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Sounds very wise. I move to authorize the addition of a 0.5 full-time employee for community development planning permit technician.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cutaback for the requested action in Agenda Bill 17065 as printed. Councilmember Cutaback.
So do you have someone currently doing the part-time position?
No.
we don't even have that.
No.
So this is just reclassifying an open position to full-time.
Correct.
Interim, or, I mean, interim. Right?
Yeah, we had somebody in that position that was actually a former full-time employee that came back to work with us after being gone for a while.
Right.
She's now since moved back into her old full-time position, just happened to open up.
Okay.
And that's really when we said, let's pump the brakes.
Sure.
Take a look at this holistically and see if halftime's right or if really a full-time employee is coming in.
Yeah,
so
it's a good problem to have that. We're busy, but we need to do this. My only question was about the budget. So the full-time planning tech cost, $61,000 and change, is that including benefits and everything?
Yeah, from May.
From
start,
May.
From May to the end of the year.
Okay.
That's full boat, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. So you've answered the first question. There's nobody in the wings, so you're not dealing with a knowledge loss if this weren't to happen, right?
Correct.
Okay. Because my next question is, have you considered, or is there a reason why you're not considering a contract position?
We've called. That's a good question. We've called even when we were managing vacancies for senior planner. I believe the mayor told me to call a couple times. We've called Proffman several times because they're kind of the leader in this. You know, they just don't have the people to come in and process permits. We've called for everything from an assistant planner to a permit tech over the last year or two up to a senior planner. And the people are just not out there doing this kind of contract work. I think it's probably a good niche to get into, but so they're just not available.
It is. And contract workers for plan review, for like building plan review is fairly standard throughout, no matter what jurisdiction you go to, so it's easy to pull a contractor in on that. So when we didn't have a building official for a while, we were able to go to that contract planner, and they had a pretty seamless transition. Do we just lose all the revenue to that individual for paying to do the plan review? With planning and permitting, it gets much more specialized in that jurisdiction. And so if you could find that person and kind of hang on to them, I know in the city of Snoqualmie, we had a planner that had worked with Snoqualmie for years. She knew everything inside and out. It was great because you could just hand it off. That initial kind of period, and if you can keep that same person, is also the tough part because people will switch in and out. But yeah, beyond that, it's much more difficult to get a permit tech, especially at this level, to come in from a consultant level and keep that person consistent. So they don't come in, all of a sudden take another job somewhere else, and now you're retraining a new person again, and which is causing more staff time, essentially.
Okay, what about knowledge loss towards the end of the year? For like knowledge loss, so if you're bringing someone in, mm-hmm. and they're not, I would expect with a contractor, somebody comes in, they do the job, they leave.
Right.
You automatically assume that whatever knowledge you use is gone.
Right.
This person's going to come in, and they're learning a whole, how the city's structured, how it works.
Right.
And there's a potential if you don't have the money, the funds in January, they'll lose that knowledge base. Is that a severe impact to the city?
I
don't know if this is going to make any difference. I'm just curious.
No, any knowledge loss is an impact because you know, that next person that comes back in, what we'd ideally, I mean, we're going to be very upfront with the applicant that this is a temporary full-time. However, you know, we have funding for a part-time position, so maybe, you know, they have this open and we don't have funding, let's say, next year or whenever, they can drop down and be prepared to go into a part-time position. You know, maybe it's,
okay.
I mean, several different things. So we'd love to retain them if we could, because you're right. I mean, it's you know how much time it takes to train somebody, because you're taking time away from that person from doing their job to train someone else. We'd love to retain that knowledge, but there is that chance. You know, I mean, just with any kind of the 1 year, 1 year service, you know, terms for an employee, it's definitely going to be a different group.
So worst case for this candidate, they come in as a full-time position with full benefits until December 31st. Then they go into a half, they could go into a half-time mode and they lose benefits. Is that what would happen? Okay.
Yeah.
It just sounds like it would be kind of hard to fill something like that, but that's one thing more contract than you.
It may be hard to fill, we don't know. We want to be upfront with the individuals.
Yeah.
It could just work out just right for us. You know, it's people, it's hard to guess, but yeah, it's definitely going to be a different level of candidate, even for a part-time job. You get different people that are interested in part-time versus full-time.
Right.
Yeah, especially in this economy, kind of like Ben was saying, with, you know, just going out looking for somebody from profit, everybody's getting pulled in. You know, I mean, it's just
the availability of candidates out there is very slim. So we're hoping we luck out and get someone.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
On your figures, the 61,000 is a figure for about 9 months of work?
Correct.
Okay, so full-time, this would be 80,000?
Ballpark.
Okay. So would it be safe to assume that if you continue to use your current staff to do overtime, would we save 36,900 and something bucks? In other words, are you going to pay that much in overtime if you don't find somebody?
Probably not, but I guarantee you the permit levels would suffer.
Okay.
Or there's always, and another thing with a good economy is someone can just look down the road and say, I can go work for that jurisdiction and not work these crazy hours. And that's the other thing you put yourself open to is them leaving. And like I said, they're two very, very quality individuals, and I would hate to see either of them go. So this is just, they've been in the dead sprint for so long that I don't know how much longer they can last without...
We're burning them out.
Right. With, you know, and then mistakes start happening and things like that. We're just hoping to avoid that. And one more thing with your question you ask about, finding that full-time person and then possibly going to halftime. One real good carrot with this position is we know we're not going to get that person that's been a permit tech for 10 years coming into this position. What we are offering is to train someone. And so they can come in and say they have this potential of only doing it for a year. They're going to get all this great training. So say it does drop down or they have to leave one day, they'll be able to go to another jurisdiction and say, hey, I got all this experience from the city of Monroe. So that's one thing they'll be able to take away from it and one benefit. So we know we're not going to get the top experienced person. However, we're looking for that person that's enthusiastic, energetic, and is the right fit and wants more. And so I think that's another thing that may help us out a little bit.
Anything further, Councilmember Scarborough? Thank you. If there's no other discussion, there is a motion on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, next item on the agenda. So we are under new business. So, Councilmember reports. Start off with the City Council Finance and Human Resources Committee. And who is the chair?
That's me.
Okay. You sound so excited. Chair
Hanger. We went against the norm. We had a member that did not show up, and we didn't.
I almost called.
It was an excuse to ask them.
Yeah, all of them.
Sound like. Not
show up. This is true. That sounded bad.
That didn't sound bad.
Excused absence. There, very much.
None of us. She didn't show up.
It was excused.
So since there was an excused absence, I stepped up to the plate to deliver. And actually, I was actually glad Councilmember Campbell was there because we were talking to Republic Services tonight about their performance. And they went through a whole list of things. They were supposed to move call centers back. It was announced in December of 2015 that there were multiple locations of call centers. All call centers were going to consolidate to three big ones, Indiana, North Carolina, and Arizona. And so most of the employees in the call centers hung out for about a year or so, and then they realized, hey, this change is coming, so they started getting different jobs and moving out, and the lady in charge at Republic, everything she knew was that, they're closing, they're moving to a different state in 6 months, and so she was helping them get jobs. And so then their higher-ups gave them the word that they're postponing for several months to 2 years, maybe it's indefinite at this point, but they still want to consolidate, but it's just not going to be right away. So then they were scrambling to restaff, knowing that it's temporary. So that combined with other cities switch their contracts over, and the contracts and the bills all went out about the same time as ours did. Combined with the snow that occurred and their lack of being proactive about the new contracts and the new billing that was coming out with our citizens led to the perfect storm where there was major frustration. And so they apologized for that, and they said a couple times they regret their they didn't say incompetence, but they regretted that. And lack of.
They did say incompetent.
Did they?
No, that was you. What's that? That was you.
Was that me?
I was saying, I don't remember that word.
And so, so yeah, Councilor Gamble made sure that they knew that was incompetence. And so the last 30 days, their customer satisfaction service line,
Customer service level. So
okay, so I'm gonna end my spot, and I'm gonna let you give a little report because of your background. So bottom line was. They are going to be in contact with, continue contact with Becky, and send monthly reports on what their service contact numbers are. And Becky is going to forward to us as a council every month until we tell her to stop sending them the numbers. So we left on good terms. We thank them for their involvement in the community and things like that. So we do appreciate them. But again, I was thankful that Councilman Gamble was there with his experience from his occupation and past occupation. So I'll let you.
Well, I think the other thing that we wanted to make sure, I mean, we did recognize they've been great community partners with us, that sort of thing. But the thing that we definitely wanted to convey is that we've gone through two contract negotiations with them. And then one in particular, we expressed, you know, our concern around if we go back to, well, what happens if it snows or if there's a, you know, a strike or something like that. And we were basically told, oh, don't worry about it, right? We've got that handled. And then we had the issue shortly after that, you know, that contract. And then if you remember on this contract in the fourth quarter of last year, we specifically, you know, asked about, when I did, about service levels and are you tracking this, are you tracking that? And yes, we are, and we're at industry standard, and we took them at their word. So in both instances, we took them at their word. You know, and Shane and I said, shame on me, you know, and I told them, I said, quite frankly, we go through negotiations again, and we're like, I'm not going to take you at your word. I mean, it's twice that it's been take us at our word, and then we're after the fact having to go back, and then when we pulled the numbers, you could see that in the second or the second half of last year, their service level started to dip substantially. Industry standard is 80%, and they were, they started there around the 72 to 79, but just long story short, this last month they are at 27%. And that was up from 17% in February. Okay. So, you know, we said, hey, that's a great sob story, and yeah, you know, as far as all the problems you're having, but that's not what you sold us as a customer, as a partner. And they were very apologetic. They wanted the opportunity to prove themselves, all that kind of stuff. The incompetence piece, just not to sound, but the part that I was really upset about was that knowing you had those issues and there was no call deflection, we didn't have a message up that said there was long haul hold times. There was no proactive communication to Becky or to the mayor or to the city administrator to say, hey, get something up on the website. There's so many like 101 customer service levers that could have been pulled that weren't pulled, that stuff is inexcusable. And we wanted to make sure that they were aware that we thought that it was inexcusable, and that basically we talked about that, and that everybody thought that that was inexcusable, and that's what they committed. She said, I don't want to promise because, you know, they understand and realize that we, they're,
broke their trust with us. So that was desperately left. They are, the surface levels are on the mend. The good news is our bills on our cycle doesn't hit until next month. So they've even got another month to kind of stabilize in the call center environment. So we should be good there. And they've assured us they will proactively communicate that they'll do some of those call deflection type item stuff going forward. So it did end well, and they really were falling. I mean, they just said, look, we totally screwed up. Mm-hmm.
They did say that summertime is their busy time, so don't look to reach that 80% right away and keep it there because so many people move and all that stuff. So just a heads up.
Which again, I reminded that that's good, but our contract and agreement was for an 80% service level. That's for them to manage. That's the way I look at it. So, but I know Becky's going to stay all over it.
Anything further from finance?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, Councilor Cook.
So,
Beck.
What?
Did you want to cover the program or what Becky covered right at the very end? Because I think that is.
We can come back real quick.
This is his report. Go ahead.
Well, I just had a question about the public service.
Oh, sorry.
So do you feel they have a good plan to solve their staffing? I mean, great that they're going to maybe communicate more with us, which is key, but do they have a plan where that you have confidence that that service level is going to go up? Could be 17%, 20%, that's... Right. So did they give you any indication what it's looking like this March, for March?
So it is on the uptrend for April. I mean, what did they expect? March was 27.
Oh, March was 27, okay.
March was 27, February was 17.
Okay.
So in April, they anticipate to be the rest of the year.
And how are they managing the staffing?
Well, right, how are they managing the staffing?
Well,
they're training. They're hired a stopgap workforce.
Yeah.
So essentially, until they centralize in those two centers, which were North Carolina, Indiana, and Arizona, until they centralize in those locations, they're hiring a stopgap workforce in order to transition over. So there is some risk in that. I mean,
yeah.
There's absolutely some risk in that.
Okay.
They're committed to it, and that's why I think it's going to be so important that we stay on top of the service levels and what we're getting from them, and then we throw a flag on the play, and then also measuring just on the good faith from the communication perspective that we don't hear about it through social media like we did the last time, or email, that we actually have a communication proactively.
Well, it's interesting because when I went down to Olympia for my work, I went down in March, when I met with Senator Pearson, that was one of the things he brought up was his garbage bill and how when he got it he was shocked and why is it double or triple and then he said he couldn't get a hold of anybody. So I mean, and then he read the article I think in the paper too, so that was something obviously he brought up to me when we met. So
well, and that was one of the things that we talked about. We said, look, we made one of the linchpins on this decision is that you sold us you would provide a better customer experience.
Right, exactly.
That was what they sold.
Yeah, totally.
So this flies in 180 degrees the opposite direction of what we were sold on a contract.
Yeah.
So,
okay, all right, thanks, guys.
Thank you. So Becky, if you could, just as a follow-up, if you can plan at those finance HR committee meetings, giving us your feedback on how they've dealt with the front desk and that end of things. So you're giving us the numbers every month, but then if you could give us how it's coming from the inside.
Any calls that we receive, absolutely.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned at the Finance Committee meeting, the ladies told me that they haven't had any calls in a number of weeks now, so they feel like it is getting better. So some of what they shared tonight didn't surprise me from that aspect. However, we're getting them so infrequently now that it's easy to track that, so that's easy to do.
That'd be great. Thank you.
We won't get calls until next month.
And we anticipate a few next month,
The last thing that Becky shared was at the end of me was that with the audit done, they shared that if she goes over the finances with the finance committee on a regular basis, then that will, and we spend the time to look through that, then that would suffice for an audit. I don't remember how many years you said we could do that, but.
So basically, there's the audit best practice and what the state auditor is pushing on the last few years, that whoever's preparing your annual report every year, that there is somebody who has accounting or finance knowledge be reviewing it and signing off on it. So the way a lot of cities have been handling that is hiring an outside CPA to review them and say, yes, this is all reasonable, you know, the numbers are footing, et cetera, and sign off. This last year, you guys paid an outside CPA to do that for you. This year, we're not going to need to do that because Diane's still here. We're having the overlap. And even though the annual report's not due to the state until the end of May, we're going to get it done before Diane's gone, which is the end of this month. And we're very close. Having said that, going forward, I've been getting to know the local team manager for Team Everett for the auditors. And in fact, we had lunch the other day. And one of the things I asked her about was this requirement, you know, this is going to cost us money if we have to continue to hire someone from outside. However, it's my understanding that if we have a set of finance committee that meets on a regular basis, they should be able to do that review and sign off, and that should be acceptable to the auditors. And she said, yes, they would actually consider that acceptable if we can give the auditors assurance that the finance committee has learned enough that they're not just a rubber stamp. So you don't have to be a CPA, but maybe during the course of our audit committee or our finance committee meetings over the next few months, if we kind of show you what it is you are reviewing against what the state auditors put out, get to know the finances just that little bit more than say the rest of the council, then that would suffice for the auditors as they review, and then we wouldn't have to pay money to have an outside CPA do that every year.
And how much did it cost for the outside CPA?
I don't know that off the top of my head. I'd have to look that up, and I can certainly follow up through the mayor for you on that. For some reason, around $3,000 is stuck in my head.
That's about right. Yeah, when I was staying in last year, I want to say it was just a couple to a few thousand, two to three, somewhere in there. But staff will send an email to you to let you know what the value is. And I think that it would be appropriate to, you know, go over the finances. I know that they give them to you in your inboxes, and I go over them with staff. But I think having the committee look at them on a regular basis is a good thing. Whether we hire, and you know, whether we do what we did last year and hire an outside person or not for, you know, for that one time review.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I would think it should be a council decision too if we're going to end up hiring someone or not.
But it's not a hiring, but what it is just a contract, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't want to speak for me as the finance chair and say, hey, I'm comfortable, we'll just skip the audit, we'll sign them off,
right,
when everyone else may not feel that way. So.
Understood.
Yeah.
You were going to say something?
Just to the, if we decided to have an outside person to look at, that'd be a budget decision that you decide in the 2018 budget.
Is it budget for 2017? Is this going through my head?
It's not because Diane's here to do
oh,
that.
Oh, that's right. Thank you, everybody. I'll return to my coffee. Okay. Anything further from finance?
That's it.
All right. Let's go to Snohomish County tomorrow steering committee.
Councilmember, well, I'm getting more and more in understanding what's going on in the steering committee. I was a half hour late because of the accident on Highway 2 trying to get there. I had to turn around and go Highway 2, come back to Snohomish and find my way around. So it took me an hour and a half to get to Everett. So some things were going on while I was not there. What was in progress when I got there, one of the things, the young lady who was talking on the situation with Sound Transit 3, ST3, and what money they're not going to have if they reevaluate the way they're doing this tabs calculation. So that was in her report, and there were people around the table who felt like it was not acceptable not to have that money come in the way it has been, and because it didn't cause anything. That was their just their position at any rate. So some people just thought, too bad, we're going to do it. So that was kind of the thought process. But the other thing that was at that meeting, there were about six projects that were in line for some $500,000 to $600,000 of money up for grabs. I forget what it was called, but two of them that were okay was one in Snohomish, something to do along Bickford Avenue, which I'm thinking is out by Bickford Ford. Something, and there was one in Sultan to do with them. And I forgot the third, but we evidently had a project request in for something for downtown that was not okay to come out of that money. And there were two other cities that put in for something that was not okay. So maybe somebody at some point can enlighten me more about what that process, how it started, and what I might have been able to say to the request outcome, because I didn't know to.
Let's let Mr. Feilberg go ahead and chime in, because the money that, do you know what the money is he's talking about? Is this the inner
quarter grants? I think that's the quarter of grants. Okay. Yeah, because we were talking about funding for the city council's decision for a choice for what to do with the intersection of Madison and Fremont Main Street for the gateway to downtown.
Okay.
So we requested grant money for that.
For that, yeah.
Six other cities, or six total cities, I believe, put in for requests. Yeah. I think the most expensive was the one in Snohomish.
Yeah.
And then Sultan was something to do with downtown, too, I think. But at any rate, we did get ours. Maybe next time. Another subject that's big at that meeting is the 2040 vision. Yeah, which I'm sorry I couldn't regurgitate and let you know what that is expressly, but I think that's one of the big topics at that entire meeting. So maybe somebody can enlighten me a little smarter on what 2040 vision is, so I can understand what they're talking about. But that was kind of the two probably most important, or the two highest profile things talked about at that meeting. The next meeting is 20 something next month. This month, I'm sorry, I've got a schedule at home. So, and I'll see what's on it, and I'll go again.
Thank you. Just a couple things. One for the record, Councilmember Kemp left chambers at 7:56 for the evening. The time right now is 8 p.m. Second, going out to staff, this might be, I don't know, yeah, for Ben Swanson. For the 2040, do you get copies of the Snohomish County Tomorrow agenda or anything like that, or do you participate like in a technical or director's working group about it?
I just got on the agenda last week.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. So it would just be good. I think this last go-around you met with Ben ahead of time and you put together a letter or something. It might be good for the two of you to meet maybe in advance of the meetings. And it would also be good to loop in the Planning Commission if that's something that can somehow be put into a cycle so they can understand what's going on. The Vision 2020 and then
2040.
And then to be the Vision 2040, those plans end up driving a lot of investments in the area. And so, you know, things like 522, Highway 2, land use densities and whatnot, they all are heavily influenced by these 20-year plans that get adopted.
Evidently, they're pretty influenced by that committee.
Uh-huh. Just why it's very important that we be there.
You might want a smarter guy. The other thing I want into the record is that the letter that we took to a meeting last 2 weeks ago was read into the record. The mayor's letter was read into the record for the meeting. So it got, you know, where it sunk in or didn't is not my call, but it was read into the record.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Councilmember Scarborough? All right, let's go ahead and go on down the line. Councilmember Gamble.
Rolling stuff.
Here you go, my pencil.
Like that? Playing stuff. Geez, I was looking at the calendar. It's been a while since we've been together. What's that?
didn't meet last week?
No, last week.
No, we did not.
Yeah, actually, so if I go back over the last couple of weeks, so I got to meet with the chief on the 22nd after our last council meeting. I'm very excited. He was going through some of the different data points that there's stuff that they're looking at, you know, our requests on, you know, like, hey, having an understanding of how many calls may be associated to, nuisance calls or panhandling or whatever. And then also he talked a lot about what we will be able to do once we get our person on board full time, which I'm sure you'll talk about later. But anyway, I appreciated your time, excited about what we're going to see, and I think there's a lot of options in that database that we could tap into down the road. And Chief, I found out, loves databases. He loves reporting. It's one of his favorite things. So. Data analysis is one of his absolute favorite things. That's what I learned. Anyway, no, but I met with the chief right before I left, and we took a couple Legends ball clubs down to Arizona. We got out of the rain for a little bit there, and it was great. Represented this all Monroe, Sky Valley boys went down, and there was over 40 teams in the 11U bracket, but there were 20 in our division, and they made it to the championship Sunday, which was pretty good because they're playing against all teams that play year-round in the sun. So a lot of fun, came back, but unfortunately that was the reason I got to see a couple Mariners or spring training games while we were down there, but we didn't get back until the day of Tip-A-Cop. So I missed Tip-A-Cop because of our trip, so I apologize, but I heard that was a great night and success from a couple folks that were there. And then most recently, I know last night, I can't wait to hear for those that went to the Screen Rangers showing, if anybody was able to attend that. I was not able to attend. I had reserved tickets and the whole nine yards, and then I had an obligation that came through that I couldn't skip. So anyway, I missed that as well. But and then just most recently, I know I can't thank administrators enough, our police force enough. We had a local threat at our high school. We've had a lot of activity there. Obviously, being in the public, we get approached from a lot of individuals about, hey, have you heard about this, or what's your thoughts, or should I send my kid to school, or this, that, and the other. And I can say with just the utmost comfort, knowing that our administration at the Monroe High School and our school district is extremely sound, would never put our kids in danger, and is prepared, and knowing our police force and how highly decorated they are and everything that they do, that we are prepared for that, and they will always be there for our kids. It's nice knowing that because of how involved that we are, and I just hope that this isn't a sign of more stupid pictures in a bathroom stall to come down the road. It's just I don't hold ill will or anything to any parent that held a student home, because those are really real things in this world now, and those are all individual decisions that parents have to make. But I trust our administration, I trust our police department, and I'll be danged if any threat, foreign or domestic, is going to make me or my kids live in fear. And I appreciate the police department being able to, so I can make that statement and feel really good about it. Thank you. And as I told my daughter, she went to school on Monday, I said, you know what, probably the safest place in the city of Monroe is going to be first lunch at Monroe High School. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Oh, I don't have anything.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
A couple things. I attended a food insecurity seminar 2 weeks ago, I guess. It's been a while since we met. It was a countywide group of leaders from nonprofits, school districts, from North Sound to East Sound. I think I was only representative from East County, but it was an incredible 4-hour seminar. The basis was how do we how do we feed the hungry is ultimately what it came down to. And there were some great presenters. We broke out into work session groups to identify problem areas, strategize of ideas, and it was interesting. In my work group, it was made up of someone from a nonprofit, someone from a school district, a faith community, a representation, and then someone from Farmers Markets Association, the kind of the big group that overseas or advocates for many of our farmers markets in throughout the state, and then another school district person. And after we all kind of brainstormed challenges of, you know, what it takes to feed the hungry and you know, ideas that we came up with, we kind of looked at the board and realized, man, the thing that's holding us back from feeding the entire community is policy. And it's not necessarily local policy like that we would, as council, would address, but it really starts with the states and the federals. And it was eye opening and in many ways a little sad. So, but I think everyone had that same reaction and realized, okay, so this is what we need to do and go from. So, very very powerful, very great seminar, and I look forward to attending more of those. Last week, Stonewall Chamber, Stonewall County Workforce, Boys and Girls Club at the East County Job Fair. At the club, 48 employers and nearly 100 job seekers again. Great turnout. Heard people, actually there were people that were showing up before it actually started to having scheduled interviews with employers that were been represented there. Local people walking out with job offers in hand. It was a great success. So, kudos to Vaughn Shelley from the Chamber and the Work Source team for spearheading that once again and creating that. And I just want to remind this group that how that got started. It was actually on a business tour over a year ago and touring Natural Factors and them saying that one of their biggest issues is that they can't find quality employers. And that sparked the idea for the job fair, and less than a few months later, the first one was born and it's going to continue. So.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Well,
thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thanks for having us. I attended the State of the County last week. Executive Summers speaking to everyone there. That was really interesting. We were mentioned. Helps that he lives in this area. I was at the memorial service for Dana Walzer, or celebration of life, I should say. And that was a really special time for our community, for those that were able to make it. It was very special. I had tickets for Screen Angels as well, and something came up with the kids, and then with Tippecop, it was the same thing. I had sick kids, so. But that's it.
Thank you. Councilor Kudabek.
I too got tickets to Screen Angels.
Sick kids, right?
Not sick kids, just didn't get home until 5 to 7 from swim lessons, so too tight of a timeline. But I also attended Mayor Donetta Walzer's Celebration of Life. I thought it was a great event. Pastor Knight did a wonderful job, and her son. It was knowing Donetta, I think she would have really appreciated, and I think it was perfect. Mm-hmm. I think it told a great story of the impact that she has had with everybody showing up, living in this community and teaching for almost 30 years and being involved as a community leader, in a time when a lot of women weren't community leaders. And so, it was wonderful. I'm glad I took the time and went, so appreciate that. So thanks to all the people who did attend, and I think it was a great event.
Thank you. That's Mr. Scarborough.
Well, and thank you for the job you did at the tip of the cup, everybody. Deputy for marshaling the waiters, and the chief for his large donation as a tip his wife put in. So it was a good event. It was kind of fun. I look forward to it again next year. Other than that, I think I've already given everything else I did this last time.
Thank you, Councilmember. All right. I'm retraining myself here. Okay. Staff and department reports. We have two updates tonight. The first one will be our finance update. Ms. Hazard.
And I won't take too long. I'm not going to pretend like I'm more interesting than the police department. So basically, I will caveat that this report was the report that would have been given in March. So it's February numbers, so it is a little dated at this point. However, one of the things about February, and again, I put it in the memo that's in your packet, it's still a little too early to look at trends. But one of the areas that I did want to highlight is the development review revenues that have been coming in. We're about 48% ahead of expectations for this time of year, and that's just after 2 months. So basically in 2 months, they've brought in half of what was budgeted for the entire year. So we're definitely on pace to exceed anything that we've seen in recent years. With the weather getting better, we only imagine that that's just going to continue to pick up. So just wanted to bring that to your attention. The other piece that we wanted to mention too is part of the 2017 budget anticipates closing out the solid waste fund. With the changeover in billing, the expectation was whatever cash is left in there, we're going to do an equity transfer out, part of which is going to go to the contingency fund. You will see some expenses and some revenues in that fund that's residual activity from 2016. Of course, we sent out a final bill in January that was for December bills, so that's why there is activity in that fund. And then we are anticipating to end the fund about $30,000 more than expected. So that means that what you will see coming before you here towards the end of the month is a budget amendment that we do every year to true up beginning fund balances. We'll also be amending for that additional cash that we weren't expecting for that transfer into our contingency fund. So that's coming as well. As far as what's going on in finance, before I get to P-cards, I want to just give you an update on passport services. Again, when I wrote this back on March 17th, our numbers continue to be pretty high. We had an additional 72 from when I first reported about this the prior month. We're definitely exceeding what our expectations were from last year, and we continue to see that growing. As far as the meter swap and the census analytics that we're using to look for leaks, again, very popular with my staff. They're really enjoying helping out our customers in trying to identify leaks, and quite frankly, pretty much across the board, the customers have been very appreciative when we reached out to them to tell them we think they might have a leak. So very popular program as well. The P cards, we wanted to just kind of bring your attention to the P card program, purchase cards. As you know, the city uses the what's called a purchase card. They walk and quack and talk just like a credit card, with a few exceptions, bathroom exceptions, so to speak. P cards, we can on the mag strip that's on the back, we can actually drill down to individual cards where it can and cannot be used, what type of activity they can charge on those cards. So, for example, none of our P cards can charge alcohol. So if someone were to go to a restaurant, try to use the P card, and try to charge alcohol, it would get rejected. We can even, so, you know, since we pay per diem, a lot of the cards don't even allow food purchases at restaurants. So we can get to that kind of security. That's part of what auditors love about P cards. They also love that each individual has their own card, so there's accountability as they are being used. From a finance standpoint, part of what we love about the cards, too, is the rebate program. So just like if you have a personal card where you get cash back, we get cash back also on all our purchases that go through the P cards. So we are trying to encourage everybody in the city to use the P cards as much as they can whenever they can, because the rebate can go up depending on the volume we put through on that P card. Also, for payment purposes, we're making one payment then to U.S. Bank for all of the cards within the city. And with our commercial banking account, we pay, if we were, for every check we pay, it's around 23 cents a check to process at the bank. Even if we do an electronic payment, they're about 11 cents for every electronic payment. So if we had to pay every vendor separately instead of one check for the P card, that starts making our banking fees go up. So we're also saving money there as well as getting the rebate back on the P cards. So anyhow, that's just a quick glimpse of what's going on in finance. Mr. Mayor, I'm open to questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to let you know I was bragging about you recently. Two gentlemen that I work with that live down south were talking about the huge water leaks that they found in their, that they're trying to find in their yard, and they didn't know about anything until they saw the grass start to drop. And, I mean, it's pretty bad, and so I got to bring them how our city calls the customers when they notice a large spike in usage so that we can shut it off and help them. So
I'll let my staff know.
Yeah.
I'll be happy to hear that.
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments for finance?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chief Windsor. Police. Okay, Deputy Chief Kennard.
Well, I don't know what finance is talking about being upstage by the police department. They get to come in and tell you what kind of revenues are coming into the city. I got to tell you how we're spending it. March was a very busy month for us. As most of you know, a lot of big events happened. We'll talk first about the stolen Armageddon truck. We got several reports over a two-day period on that. After that happened and it hit the news, we got a tip on it. I'll tell you that we do have a suspect identified in that. There were a lot of pictures and a lot of things that those folks did that if you're going to steal things, you probably shouldn't do. But I won't go into details about how all of them occurred, but there is somebody that we're looking at. We just haven't found yet. And then found property. I'm sure that all of you heard about the 4 pounds of marijuana that was donated to the Goodwill store. But what you probably didn't realize, it was in a brand new cooler. And nobody even mentioned that. Jimmy Kimmel had it on late night television. That's the fourth time that we've had something from Monroe on late night commentary. So we're getting monologue time there. The other thing that may not have gotten out there is this was in conjunction with a larger case. Through King County Police Organizations and the Marysville Police Department, we brought the SWAT team into town and did a search warrant on a marijuana distributing ring as well as a burglary ring. We did get two weapons off the street based on that case. So the guys did a great job supporting the SWAT team. They did all their briefings at the police department here, and we supported them in that fashion as well as having members on that SWAT team. So, stolen vehicles up at Lord Lake. We did have a call at the Chevron station that there were two people fighting. We got out into the area. We did not find the cars racing, but did find one submerged in Lord's Lake. There were two occupants of that vehicle, a female who stayed on scene after she swam out of the vehicle, and a male who had left and went into the neighborhood hiding underneath the house. We brought out our canine, and before we put him under the house, the guy decided that it would be a good idea to come out, and was taken into custody at that point. A couple of the other things that happened in regards to that is we had witnesses that said they had thought that one of the persons involved in this threw a gun in the lake. We did bring out the dive team on their training day a couple of days later, and we recovered a 9mm handgun out of the lake. During that dive, we also had officers out standing by for the dive team, and lo and behold, the tornado came through. We're trying to hold down the tent for them and so on, so it was a very active day for us. On the encampments, just a brief overview on that. We did have one unoccupied camp at Elmoreland Park, which we removed on the 28th of March. All the camps out behind Chain Lake Storage and Goodwill were removed. All the camps behind Fred Meyer's and Walmart have been removed. DOT's been actively working on that. That's not to say we don't have any more problems. We still have a very active DOT properties do remain an issue. One of the things that I really wanted to talk about was the administrative side of the house.
Before you move to that, Councilmember Scarborough, is this on encampments?
Yes, sir.
When you say they've been removed, I understand that. Do they also do a cleanup of the camp when they remove it?
Yes, when we take the encampments, we give them notice, we go out with DOT, and we clean up the areas as we go through. So.
Thank you. And Deputy Chief, just to throw in there, encampments, we did have a tent suddenly pop up on a building.
Yes, we had one in the strip mall located up on Chain Lake. We had a tent and on top of the roof of the building. We did see a ladder up the next morning and went out to address that. That was the HVAC guy up there working. We found out what was happening is they're climbing the tree next to the building to get up to it. So I did talk to Mike Farrell. Evidently they've got some bug spray that's real sticky that they spray on trees to try to keep the bugs out. And I suggested maybe. Who knows? No, I'm only kidding. But they removed that. The HVAC salesman took that tent with him when he left. So we haven't seen any other activity on that particular property. So
thank you.
The administrative side of the house is something that we don't talk about all the time, but it's very, very important to the police department, and those folks are doing a phenomenal job for us. Of all the areas that we track, we're up in most all areas. Public records continues to be our biggest spike. In 2012, we had 733 requests, and in 2016, we had 1,135 requests for public disclosure. Some of those requests can be one page, some of them can be notebooks and notebooks and notebooks. We've had them that take almost a year to fulfill those requests, so it becomes a big part of it. And I'm very, very happy with the job that the administrative side of the house is doing. They continue to work very diligently on that. We also have seen a spike in our fingerprinting, and that includes school district CPLs or concealed pistol licenses, vulnerable adults and children, and administrative bookings. Our courts keep us pretty busy with administrative bookings on Wednesday. But I'm also happy to report that the Washington State Patrol Criminal Records Division has recognized our department as one of two in the state of Washington that keep up with all that stuff for administrative bookings and properly booking people. CPLs are on the rise again, and we expect this trend to continue as we go through the rest of the year. And lastly, we had our animal control public service young lady out there, Gabby Escalante, down at the Criminal Justice Academy, where she had just returned from the Animal Control Academy, and she graduated from that last week or the week before, I believe. So that was it. If there's any questions, I'd be very happy to answer.
Any questions for Deputy Chief Pinard? I see none. Thank you very much, Deputy Chief.
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you.
Mr. Musa, did you want to chime in? Oh, okay. Mr. Worthen.
Nothing today, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Mr. Farrell.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. I just want to give you an update on the playground at Lake Tai replacement. So you may notice all the
old equipment that's been removed by our crew, all the surfacing materials, and some of it's piled up that's going to be repurposed. And we just met with the contractors today, and actually we're looking at next week sometime for the playground pieces to arrive. So then they'll go right to work, and so you'll start seeing some construction out there. So we're on schedule, actually ahead of schedule.
Great.
And that's all.
Thanks. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Worthen or Mr. Farrell? Okay. Mr. Swanson.
Thank you. If you go downtown, you'll see a few more feather banners gone off the street, and that is actually due to Amy Bright. She about a month ago, maybe a little over that, came into the assistant planner and code enforcement role, and with the help of the police department, Gabby's provided some translation for those business owners. And I hate to call it enforcement at this point, it was just her going and talking to them. And many of them were very receptive. One of them even made the comment that said, I told the mayor that I'll take down my feather banner as soon as I got a code enforcement officer down here. So they said, now you have it, and I'll take down my feather banner. So we're just in the stage of Amy going around and just talking to business owners. We're not sending threatening letters or anything at this time. It's more of just that one-on-one meeting with them, which makes a much, much bigger difference from just sending a letter. So that will slowly kind of start going on throughout the city, but that's the initial phase.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Swanson? Okay, and as all of you know, one of the things that we're doing this year is we're going to be doing a unified development code update. We're going to be bringing before you, after it goes through planning commission, and it'll take some period of time, basically a repeal, and then we're going to insert, or I guess replace, sorry, I don't know what else to say, but real repeal and replace the development regulations with a new development code. And so that is something that Mr. Swanson will be moving forward with developing the scope and then sending out an RFP for it. We're hoping to have a little bit of conversation about the subject matter for that this week and maybe next week. I anticipate coming before council just to talk with you about the scope and also planning commission before actually sending it out on the street. So that's one pretty very significant project that is happening that we're starting this year. And it's part of what's needed to implement the comprehensive plan that council adopted a couple years ago. Do you have anything to add to that?
No, pretty much. You'll probably see it maybe around May.
Okay. Okay, sounds good. Councilmember Kovac.
I did have one question. This is on a different topic, but when what came before council maybe a month ago was just a development and whether we needed to have two access into the development, and we had kind of that discussion about how it's beneficial to have two access points. And when I was walking around the community, I noticed there's one development that it's not always open. It's a fire lane, so it's blocked off. But then in case of an emergency, you could open it up. So, I mean, when we do new developments, do we look at that and go, okay, we don't necessarily need to have a total other road that is always open, but do we then look at alternatives and possibly requiring it where it's a fire lane that's blocked off but could be opened in case of an emergency? It would just seem like it's good policy, because we've had that discussion. This is why 191st up there, there's only that one entrance in and out. So it could be a point where you're not using it all the time, so it doesn't have to be as developed maybe, or there's not going to be the traffic on it, but it's there in case of an emergency. Do we look at those alternatives? I know we don't require the two access points, but
we do look at those alternatives, and in the future code, that's one thing we will be proposing is making, because it's Appendix D of the fire code, essentially.
Yeah.
The city didn't adopt that, or it's not currently adopted by the city, and we'd be looking at doing something similar to that, where it's up to, for single-family residential, it's up to 30 units. However, if you sprinkler the buildings, then you don't have to provide that secondary access beyond 30 units. For multifamily, I believe it goes up to 99.
for secondary access, but then they also have to be sprinkled. So we'd be putting something like that in the future code regarding access points, providing additional access points. The area you were talking about, that it is, it's good policy to do something like that, and we do try to get the developer to do something like that, because you're right, it is less of an impact. It's not a full road with improvement with a rear shine block.
Right.
It's more of a last ditch effort if something doesn't work out. And actually, on that plat that you reviewed, and this is more of an after the fact, we are working with the new owner of that plat to try to get some type of access easement in there to do it, access exactly like you're talking about.
Okay.
Emergency only. It would have bollards. It would have basically a lock for the fire department.
Right.
They could go in. We're working with them. I can't promise you anything.
Yeah. Okay.
But
I was just thinking that when I've been walking around the community and I saw another development that has that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, this is good policy. I mean, if we can't build a full road and we don't need to, at least have something like that.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ben.
Sure.
Thank you. All right, anything further for Mr. Swanson? All right. Ms. Master.
So the spring cleanup is scheduled for May 13th, 9-1 at the Monroe High School. You will see in your April utility bill a flyer that will have the do's and don'ts of what's going on, inviting you to come out and, you know, take advantage of it. You will have to bring the original flyer with you. That's going to be your proof of residency for the spring cleanup, but just wanted to give you a heads up that that is on its way.
Cool. Any questions for Ms. Hassard? All right, let's go back to Mr. Farrell really quickly. The egg hunt is April
15th, Saturday, two Saturdays from now.
Okay, so you might want to get that on your calendars. What time?
I believe 10 o'clock.
You're going?
Yeah. 10 o'clock is the actual hunting. So, but yeah, you want to be there at 9.
So we'll send out an email reminder of the date and the time. Oh, it just went out today. Okay, and it'll be on Facebook a couple times also.
And I will notice that one.
Thank you. All right. Let's go ahead and go to Public Works. Mr. Feilberg.
Nothing tonight.
Nothing tonight. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Feilberg so that he has more to say than nothing tonight? Okay. Chief Quincer.
Excuse me, I have a couple of things. First of all, April 10th will be the first day for the embedded social worker here in Monroe. And after the first day, we will send for either 2 or 3 weeks where they're going for training. So the actual start date in Monroe would be either the 24th of April or the 1st of May. I don't think that's decided yet. And second and lastly here, I never pretend to speak for Fred Walzer, but I know how appreciative he was of the mayor and the council members that came to Donetta's celebration of life. He expressed that to me on Sunday morning when I met with him, and he was just taken back by all the local support at the celebration of life, and also the people that came at a considerable distance to that moment. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Chief Quincer? All right. Mr. Mosley.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Just wanted to report on a couple of things. Last Tuesday, I attended the Snohomish County Committee for Improved Transportation, and there were three main topics of conversation. One was transportation projects that are underway or are in process, and they were all projects that are a part of the Connecting Washington list in Snohomish County. Particular note was the 405-522 interchange project that's also looking to receive some additional money in the transportation budget this year. As Councilman Scarborough mentioned, ST3 was a big topic of conversation, and the MVET formula. I would say that the basic tenor around the room was that if some funds have to be reduced from ST3 around this reformulation, the general sentiment was that it should not affect Snohomish County, and that projects that, particularly in King County, that were not on the original list should be affected before projects like Ainge Field and Everett are affected. And there's also quite a discussion about the Marysville-Arlington MIC that is going through PSRC and getting for review there. So those were the three, there were other things, but those are the three main topics there. And finally, just wanted to mention we had our quarterly all-staff meeting on Thursday. The mayor was here on Thursday afternoon, so he was able to participate in that. We had every month the Public Works is trying to fatten us up because they do a dessert cake day, they call it, but this time it was banana splits. And we did that and then did the all-staff meeting. It's just an opportunity for the staff to hear what's going on outside of their own little purview, that, you know, all the department heads report on what they're doing. It's something that, of course, predated me. And I almost missed the first quarter because I forgot about it till we did it on the 28th, I think. No, the 30th. And I did have received some comments from crew and staff that they really appreciate hearing what their other city family staff, folks are doing. So appreciated everybody's involvement with that. That's it, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Just the nice thing about going last is everybody has already talked about everything. Tornado, everybody saw that. I saw the helicopters flying overhead. Figured there was a prison break, didn't realize that there had just been a tornado. Screenagers, I did not reserve tickets, except for the fact that I reserved them at the last minute on Monday and ended up taking somebody's seats. So that was a really good documentary about people using screens, so using laptops, using iPhones, and so on and so forth. And it got into not just the etiquette and safety issues, but also addiction. We do have an addiction center that has just opened up here in Monroe for people that are addicted to electronic devices. And as one of the people that they interviewed talked about another similar center, it's like a 45 or 90 day, I forgot what the number was, but it's a substantial amount of time where they treat you for electronic device addiction. And just to give you some idea, another person they interviewed was somebody that got into a private college in our state and apparently started playing his computer game on his Xbox or something, and started missing classes, and then ended up basically failing out of his first quarter of college, and had to come home. And he had reached a point where he was playing from roughly midnight until roughly noon the next day, and then falling asleep and getting back online between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. and repeating the cycle. So anyway, it was a very interesting documentary. We did have Officer Springer there, who's our school resource officer at the high school, that talked a little bit about safety. And it was a very good documentary. There were two theaters that were reserved. So for those of you that I thought I might have seen there, I just assumed that you were in another theater. I know that a number of you had heard about Monroe High School yesterday, and one of the things that we're going to be doing next week is Chief Windsor, Mr. Mosley, the chair of the school board, Darcy Chessman, and the superintendent, Deka Smith, and I are going to get together on Wednesday, late Wednesday next week, just to talk a little bit about how this went as far as giving notice to parents and notice to the public, and what sort of things worked, what sort of things we could have done better, and just revisit communication between the city and the school district when incidents like this come up. So anyway, that's just an FYI for you. They don't happen a lot, but we just want to make certain that we're touching base with them and making certain that the communication is going well. I think that's all I have for right now. So we'll go ahead and go to the agenda for next week and the extended agenda.
First I'll just mention you have the green light report in your packet, so I won't reiterate all that, other than to say that all of the state budgets are now out. The operating budget from both the House and the Senate have been released. The transportation budget from both the House and the Senate have been released. The capital budget from the Senate has been released. The House is releasing theirs, I understand, from our lobbyists tomorrow. So at that point, all the budgets will be released. What that means is there's just a lot of behind closed negotiating sessions going on in the legislature, and not a lot on the committee or on the floor right now. I would mention to you, and you all received a copy of this, but the mayor did send a letter to our delegation about a couple of concerns in the operating budget for both the House and the Senate, and they include some increased shift of funds, in the Senate budget, shift of funds from state to local jurisdictions, including the city of Monroe, and the full year impact of that left to employee pension shift is about $90,000 per year to the city of Monroe, and we raise that antenna to the to our delegation. And on the House side, the family and medical leave insurance program will impact us not so much in 18, but by the time we get to 2020, it's like $47,000. So we just wanted to highlight those budget issues for our delegation. Thank you, Mayor.
Any questions on the lobby report?
On the agendas, as you see, we have another public hearing next Tuesday night on the interim marijuana regulations. We will be also in a public works first reading ordinance, and then final action on the East Monroe extension that you had a public hearing and first reading on tonight. I would point out that on the next meeting on the 18th, we have a presentation from Snowpack on the dispatch consolidation study that they will be here. They will probably take a little bit longer in their presentation because it's a big deal. It's an important issue, and so we're going to ask them to stay to as close to 15 minutes as they can, but obviously they need to cover some information for you. Also, we're anticipating having the Mayor Pro Tem sign the Snohomish County interlocal agreement for the social worker services, and also first reading on the 2017 budget amendments that Finance Director Hazard referenced this evening. So those are the issues coming up.
Councilmember Gamble?
I'm going to be out of being used in Washington on business on April
9th. Okay,
thank you. We'll make that an excused absence.
I appreciate that.
Maybe not.
Much different than just not showing up.
Okay, does anybody have any questions or comments for the agenda for next week or the extended agenda? Seeing none, I believe we got the business for this evening. Councilmember Rasmussen, I should be adjourned. Thank you. Okay, I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much for a great evening, and thank you for your service. For adjourned.
What's that?